but they were playing. It was day 15 of the Basho. They were playing the highlights from the first 14 days. And I just sat there for like 2 hours and watched it. And I was like, this is fucking awesome.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Two Fight Fans. I'm the first fight fan, Colin.
And I'm the other Stuart.
Today is going to be more, we just want to go back and forth. We got a few different topics that we both listed here. Stu, why don't you go first this time?
Oh, geez, putting me right on the spot.
Exactly.
We've been talking a lot about MMA recently, and with not a lot of other MMA fights on the horizon, turning the attention to boxing and just seeing if there's any boxing matches you've kind of bookmarked that you're anticipating coming up this year. Mostly just see if we have stuff that we can fill later, you know, podcast time with, or yeah, if there's just any matches in the future you're interested in.
So here's the thing. My like combat sports viewing life has kind of gone in weird cycles. When I was in college, like I was really into boxing, and that was probably like the time in our generation to be into boxing. I mean, you've got, you know, Manny Pacquiao setting record after record. Mayweather was still fighting, you know, pretty frequently. You had a lot of bigger mainstream names that were active. And
so what you're telling me is you're now a filthy casual.
Pretty much. But there are two fighters that I follow two boxers that I follow in any of their fights, I will try to watch. The first one, Vasily Lomachenko, who's just skill-wise, like, incredible. The second one, Naoya Inoue from Japan. He is legit, man. Holy crap. Like,
so you haven't been paying attention to this, like, heavyweight renaissance that we've been going through, or?
So, like, I didn't know if that was, like, still going. Because I remember years ago, Jeez. You and I talked about this. And, yeah, because you were like, yeah, it's like the heavyweight division is just, like, this insanity that's happening right now. I did see the Ruiz, is that his name?
Anthony Ruiz.
Yes, when he got like knocked down, or it looked like he was like going to be knocked down. He was severely outmatched, and he just came back and knocked out his opponent. That same exact round, like, oh my god, that was a fucking Rocky movie right there.
Which fight was this? I mean,
this was years ago.
Oh, okay, years ago. Yeah, so you're not actively paying attention to the fact that we might have, for the very first time, an undefeated unified four belt champion in the heavyweight division, which has never happened before in the four belt era, that it's between Alexander Usyk, the greatest, possibly one of the best cruiserweights and heavyweights of all time, against the giant Tyson Fury, who's undefeated as well, Anthony Joshua. I mean, Deontay Wilder is kind of out of the picture, but he was rocking it up in there.
Yep.
It's a great time to jump into the heavyweight class. You've got Canelo Alvarez, like, proving that he's probably the biggest star outside of Mayweather and that boxing's ever had, and like,
yeah,
just beating everyone and continually going up weight classes. We've got Beterbiev versus Bivol coming up. Terrence Crawford against Errol Spence, like one of the most like insane performances in boxing I think I've ever seen. And you're hanging around with Lomachenko, who's still good, but has lost multiple fights recently.
Yeah, I just like his fighting style. It's like, it's just so entertaining and so skillful to me, so.
Yeah, but then he gets beaten by more skilled people, like Teofimo Lopez. And then Teofimo Lopez loses his mind and loses his next fight.
Actually, I do want to go back to Canelo, because he was also one that I was, that he showed up, you know, right at that like tail end of, because, you know, he had the fight with Mayweather, but like he was on one of the undercards, and I remember seeing him fight for the very first time on one of the undercards of some, it was either Mayweather or Pacquiao event, and I was like, who is this Mexican ginger? Like, he's like so young. He's had like 30 professional fights already, and I'm just so confused right now. And I was like, wow, he's like really, really good too. He's legit. My boxing coach was watching with us at the time. And he's like, no, this guy, he's legit. He's real. You're going to see, he's going to be the next big name. I was like, all right, sure. But what has he been up to actually? Cause I honestly have not.
Well, when did you stop watching? Did you stop watching him like Floyd Mayweather? So you didn't see him like smoke Amir Khan and beat Miguel Cotto and have his three matches with Gennady Golovkin, which was like truly some of the best boxing I've seen at middleweight in a long, long time.
I've seen some highlights, but I haven't actually been following like recently. So give me the summary. Give me the play by play.
I mean, he's just basically he's gone through and his big pledges. He's really about trying to reunite all four belts in the divisions he's in. So he's done it at middleweight against Gennady Golovkin. He beat a lot of like the active middleweights. Then he decided he wanted to go up to light heavyweight. Fought Sergey Kovalev, who was a little bit old, but knocked him out in the 11th round. Then decided to go back to super middleweight because he was pretty small at light heavyweight. And then he beat Callum Smith for three of the belts. And then he, I think, united all four belts at super middleweight against Billy Joe Saunders. He's beating Caleb Plant. He's beating, he had another fight with Gennady Golovkin, which was kind of annoying because the Gennady Golovkin fights, it was a draw their very first fight, even though Golovkin, I thought, clearly won it. The second fight, I thought Golovkin got robbed as well. Because I will say Canelo does seem to have a way on the judges' scorecards. They see that luscious red hair, and they just kind of give him rounds that I don't think he necessarily should have won. And then he waited till Golovkin got too old. He fought in 2022 for the third time against Golovkin, and it was a pretty boring affair. But before that, he went up to super light heavyweight and fought Dmitry Bivol. He lost. But, I mean, he is the real, like, box office king of boxing at the moment.
Yes. Yeah, I'll agree.
Yeah, and he's like 33, 34 right
he's
now.
He's young. Yeah. Yeah.
But you can see, like, he's still, right, one of the most athletically gifted boxers out there, and still, you know, has insane technique. His mechanics are almost perfect. But he's just getting a little bit older, right? Like, you can see he's just a little bit slower, his foot speed. He never really was very, like, fleet of foot, but his foot speed is slowed down, his hand speed is slowed down a little bit. So he's kind of coming to the, I would say, like, kind of the last few years of his kind of, like, real being king shit of fuck mountain. It's kind of a bummer that you missed it. Like, he's been here for so long and been dominating and putting on, like, really masterful performances, and you've been just watching Power Slap instead. It's great disappointment.
No, I haven't. I'm gonna talk about that, but no, I want to ask. So, okay, you've got these heavyweights trying to fight for like a unified heavyweight title, a feat that's never been done in the history of boxing. That, and then you've got Canelo still the unified four belt champion for middleweight?
I think super middleweight. No, he dropped the middleweight belt.
Okay.
I'm not sure who it is at middleweight at the moment. Let me look.
Okay. But while you're looking up that, and now you've also got Inoue, who is a unified champion at bantam or super bantam, I believe. And so this was my first like major kind of issue with how boxing has evolved. You know, you've got their different organizations and rankings are all different, but like, you know, you could have four champions and four from four different organizations, but like, how to unify it just hasn't happened that often, you know?
Yeah.
But now we are, like you said, in a time where across multiple weight divisions, these stars are rising up to become unified champions, you know? in lighter, in middle, and heavier weight classes. So is this an argument that either A, we like actually have, you know, a revitalization in the boxing world, or is it just these people way outclass all of their opponents and you've just got like the generational talents that no one else can rise up to right now?
Okay, say that this or that question again, but with different words for me, because I'm not sure I understand totally what the difference is.
Let me try to rephrase that. Yeah. So okay, like, are we in a time now where boxing is actually like competitive and we actually have? I mean, it's kind of, I guess, yeah, you got a good point. Like, it's actually competitive, but we're seeing something that, you know, where across these organizations and whatnot, you know, you've got these fighters who are actually setting new records, setting, you know, new standards in the world of boxing. Or do we just happen to have three generational talents of boxers who are just basically outclassing everyone in their divisions, and just their star power is what's drawing some of this attention to boxing?
Yeah, I mean, the box office-ness, like comparing technique to box office-ness, is a little bit challenging, right? Because you wouldn't throw Mike Tyson into the top five best heavyweights of all time, even though he box office-wise, probably drew some of the strongest of any heavyweight that's ever been.
Wait, you would not put him in the one of your top five? Top five heavyweights?
Yeah, Tyson?
Mike Tyson?
Yeah, no.
Iron Mike?
Yeah, no, I would not.
Okay. We'll come back would to you? That later on, but...
Come now, you can't name five better heavyweights than Mike Tyson.
Okay, again, define better, like skill-wise, box office draw office.
Okay, well, I'm going to say skill or like resume-wise. Remember, you've got Joe Lewis, you've got George Foreman, you've got Joe Frazier, you've got, you know, Evander Holyfield, you've got Lennox Lewis, you've got Muhammad Ali. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to think on that a little bit, but okay, keep going. Sorry.
I know there's the aura of Mike, but I guess I would like ask, like on his resume, like on paper, whose scalps does he have where you're like, whoa, like that guy? Yeah. Anyway, what I'll say is we have possibly a top five heavyweight of all time in Alexander Usyk, who's already the best cruiserweight that has ever been. I mean, since that division is not super old as far as I can recall. But yeah, like he's the best cruiserweight that's ever fought. And I think probably pound for pound, one of the most skilled boxers currently going. And he's a heavyweight, right? So he's like has amazing technical skill and talent. And he's a heavyweight. So he's a big dude, which like draws the most amount of eyes. And he might fight someone who is, I think, 6 or 7 inches taller than him and close to like 40 or 50 pounds heavier than him, and Tyson Fury, who's also undefeated.
He's a heavyweight?
Usyk?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he used to fight at cruiserweight. He united all four of those belts and I believe was undefeated he has to be. He's undefeated in total at cruiserweight. And then he moved up to heavyweight, beat Anthony Joshua twice. Mm-hmm. And then him and Fury are going to fight for, again, in the four-belt era, which, right, it's never happened before, but the four-belt era only came about in the late 80s, early 90s. So it's not this long-storied thing. And you had the Klitschko brothers refusing to fight each other, and so that kind of muddies the accomplishment as much. But, yeah, Usyk is absolutely phenomenal, and we get to see him fight Tyson Fury, who I think is no less than, you know, second or third best heavyweight alive at the moment, and like an actually skilled heavyweight. Anthony Joshua, who I know doesn't have necessarily the technical acumen of a lot of like the heavyweight bests, but is an absolute hoss. Usyk has beaten him twice and very convincingly.
I'm watching his highlights right now. He is so much smaller than Anthony Joshua, like height, size wise, like,
yep.
I was like, there's no way, but wow. Yeah, so, all right.
Yeah, we have a renaissance in the heavyweight division. I don't know if you watched the Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder trilogy.
I mean,
absolutely phenomenal trilogy at heavyweight. What a great division to be watching right now. Welterweight and up. Terrence Crawford against Errol Spence. It was the same night, I believe, as Alexander Volkanovski and Yair Rodriguez. And I was flipping back and forth between those two fights. And I think the Terrence Crawford one ended right before Alexander Volkanovski walked out. But it was like watching two absolute, like, legit pound-for-pound greats kind of displaying their skills. Alexander Volkanovski just taking Yair Rodriguez to the cleaner. And I had been watching Errol Spence for a long time, and I was like, I think it's going to be a pretty difficult fight. And Terrence Crawford just tore through him like it was absolutely nothing. It was a phenomenal fight. He's talking about going up, because I believe that was at 140, going up to 154 and fighting Big Red. Like jumping up two weight classes and taking on Canelo. And I would love to see it. It's the best time to be a boxing fan, and it's been, I think, since the Pacquiao Mayweather kind of era.
There's more
going on in more divisions, right? Because at that time it was just welterweight up to middle, and now you've got something going on at heavyweight. You've got Inoue. You've got a ton of these 140 pound, 137 pound fighters. Tank Davis, Devin Haney, Shakur Stevenson, Teofimo Lopez. I mean, you've got Lomachenko still, and then in a way just kind of destroying anything below 130 pounds. It's a great time to watch boxing.
All right, you've gotten my attention now.
Yeah, come on.
This is why I need you. This is why I need this podcast here.
So now that you've thought through, as I was yelling at you, your top five heavyweights, lay it on me. Oh. Let's hear what this fight fan's palate is.
I'm not as familiar with some of the modern, like, in this era right now, so if you remove Alexander Usyk, Tyson Fury, you know, because I've only seen a few of their fights, and I think about some of the impact of some of these the heavyweights and what I think about what Mike Tyson did, you know, especially early on in his career, like how fast, how skilled, like, and how undersized he was, you know, like from a height and just everything in comparison. He was like, for that time, like a freak of nature coming out.
Yeah.
You know, and early in his career, you know, when he was young, it was just like unmatched. And then when his trainers kind of shifted and things got kind of crazy, and which is an understatement for his life, it kind of, I feel like his story is always like one of like what could have been, but also like the perils of boxing early on back then, of how it just became like not necessarily a sideshow, but where like anyone and everyone was taking advantage of fighters, you know?
Yeah. I mean, shit, man, that's still happening. We've got the whole UFC.
Yeah.
Still operating as a business, right?
That's true. That's true. Yeah, this one, I think I'm gonna need more time on this one. I'm sorry,
it's all good. No, right? Like,
what's Tyson. Yours? What are yours then?
I'd probably put Usyk at number five. Number four, I'd probably put Lennox Lewis. Three, probably George Foreman, Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
And you can kind of fuck around with that a little bit. I think if Usyk beats Fury and maybe has another, it sounds like they want to do a third fight with Anthony Joshua. Then I don't
why,
because like it's well, that's kind of the thing right now is like these guys are just so far ahead of everyone else in the division. And Deontay Wilder had been there, even though he was like the least skilled of them. They'd gone through all of the other kind of perennial challengers to the title, or a lot of like the people that are, you know, really good but not quite truly elite. Joshua beat them, Deontay Wilder beat them. Usyk hadn't fought as much. He was kind of clearing out cruiserweight. There's not much else to do, and it's I mean, that's the thing with boxing, right? Why we have this kind of weird thing where we can conflate skill with like pay-per-view attraction at boxing, I feel like. Though we do in MMA as well in other sports, but because pay is such a much larger aspect, because the boxers have a lot more leeway and control over who they fight and how much they get paid. Yeah, so yeah, right? Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury would be a huge fight. I don't really know, but I mean, I guess you haven't been paying attention, or maybe you have. No. So stop me if I'm mansplaining, but like Saudi Arabia has come in with bags and bags and bags of cash to get these. That's why we're getting a lot of these fights. It's mostly because, you know, when somebody comes in with way more money than anyone ever dreamed for a fight, a lot of these promoters are much more willing to talk. It's not, it ends up being all that stuff where they're like, oh, this person's scared. Oh, we just can't come to any sort of like contractual negotiation. It's just really difficult to figure these things out. It's really complicated. Turns out when you just have like $40 million, it's not that complicated at all.
Yeah. Okay.
So, okay. You're not watching boxing. What are you watching then?
So, okay. One thing that I've gotten into lately, Power One Slam. Championship.
Oh, okay.
No, fuck Power Slam. One championship. Two things I want to bring up really quickly. On April 5th, Jack Peacock made his One Championship debut. Do you know anything about this guy?
Jack Peacock.
Jake.
Jake Peacock.
Yeah.
I mean, besides sounding almost like a Harry Potter character, I don't know anything about Jake Peacock, no.
So, at first, when I first heard of this announcement, I was like, this seems like kind of like it just doesn't seem right. But he is
okay.
A one-armed Muay Thai fighter.
Ooh.
So, his right arm, slightly below his elbow, is gone. So, I don't know much about him. I don't know if this is like a birth defect or if this was like an accident or something that happened, but he is one-armed and fights Muay Thai.
Okay.
And before we go into that, Muay Thai in One Championship is fucking brutal. Like, I don't know why more people don't watch this. Like, it is so good. And all the fighters are so skilled. And it is nonstop action for three to five rounds. And it's only 3 minutes. It's all stand-up, all insane striking. Like, I don't understand why it's not nearly as popular as it should be.
Yeah, I mean, like, America's never really got onto kickboxing as, like, something that they watch. MMA kind of dominated it, but, like, kickboxing, which is weird because most, like, casual MMA fans or, like, the young frat dudes on college campuses don't like the grappling aspect. So I don't quite know. It is true, right? Like, especially the 4 ounce Muay Thai at one really is like, for us, like, ostensibly being an MMA promotion, that's the biggest thing that they have over the UFC. That like differentiates them. I wish one would just, I mean, they're going to disappear soon. Their financial report has been so, like, I mean, just burning money with zero return. But I wish they would just do that and not do MMA. Like, just do 4 ounce Muay Thai. Get every like kickboxer in the world, like, kind of resurrect what K1 was, you know, and just do it in 4 ounce gloves. I think that'd be phenomenal.
I do like some of their like crazy mixed rules exhibition matches, like they had with DJ and Rodajang.
Rod Tang?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, it's, yeah, there's some fun. It's got kind of that like freak show element, which,
admittedly, that one was a little gimmicky, but it was like, it was just cool to see. Like,
yeah, it's cool to see. Yeah. It's that they should stick to that. They should stick to that. They have like submission grappling competitions.
Which it is really, pretty good.
Really good. They should do that rather than doing like really middling MMA fights too. I like their rule set more, but if you're gonna watch MMA, especially now that the antitrust suit is over, like your option is the UFC, and everything else is not really as worthwhile. So just let's do 4 ounce K1. Let's get as many kickboxers into one as possible. So wait, is this Jake Peacock? Is he fighting for the 4 ounce Muay Thai, or is it the?
Because
they have the actual kickboxing with the big gloves.
No. He fought with 4 ounce gloves in Muay Thai in his debut, and he won. Spoiler alert: he won. he looked good. You know, like,
how did his opponent look?
I mean. It wasn't like championship caliber here, but it was still like, you know, these both of them were professional fighters. And like, I was just very impressed by Jake Peacock's overall, like his skill and his adaptation. And it was very clear that like, okay, his opponent like won't know what to do. Like, I think he probably came in like your average person, like, okay, he's got one arm, I don't have much to worry about, but he was able to use like his elbow to in within a clinch. He had good kicking, like,
yeah, dude, he's got some fast kicks. I'm watching this highlight of him.
Yeah,
this guy's got, and it is amazing, right? Because he has his hand that he can actually like make a fist and have a glove with, that is his back arm. It looks like he leads, or his lead arm is the one where he has the amputation.
Yeah.
And so then he can not only throw like a rear hand, but he steps forward and begins to jab pretty effectively with it. So he kind of, at least this one fight, he's landing across and then immediately steps through and starts peppering him with jabs in pretty quick succession, in a way that I don't think many people are used to fighting with.
Yeah. Like, how do you step for that?
Yeah, dude, his kicks are very fast.
Yeah.
He is hitting this guy right in the liver quite repeatedly. Pretty rude. Pretty rude in my mind. yeah, damn.
But yeah, well,
I'll
legit.
Keep an eye out for him.
He's legit.
So he's fighting April 5th, you said?
Well, he did fight.
Oh, he did fight, yeah. Of course.
But yeah, so I was very impressed and surprised at that. But I did not know about the whole financial returns for one championship, how they're like basically barely surviving or not surviving. Like,
yeah, it's the it's kind of exhausting to like think about. The long and short of it is like the UFC, every dollar made in the MMA world, 90 cents of it is made by the UFC. If you combined one championship, PFL, Bellator, which is now one organization, and every boxing promoter, Matchroom, Top Rank, Golden Boy, and you looked at their profit margins, the UFC makes more than all of them combined.
Wow.
And for boxing, because of the Ali Act in the United States and promoters, that right, you have a lot more promoters. You have a lot more belts, right? It does cause it to be a little harder for the matches that fans maybe want to be made, and can kind of muddy exactly, okay, who's champion? Wait, this guy has one belt and this guy has a different belt, and what's right. going on? It can make it not as user-friendly. But it allows these businesses to survive and the fighters to make a decent amount of money. Yeah, PFL and Bellator and one championship, they have never had a year in which they posted a profit. They've routinely been in the red. One championship just collects a bunch of VC funding, and PFL and Bellator was owned by Viacom. PFL again just got, I think, $100 million from the Saudi Arabian sovereign wealth fund. So it's a lot of right people giving them money, hoping that they can match what the UFC does. But it turns out no one can because of how much of a monopoly the UFC has over the business. So, right, VC funding can keep something that's failing alive for a long time, but when that money dries up, its ability to actually generate its own income to keep itself sustained, one does not have that. PFL, Bellator do not have that. No MMA organization basically has that outside of the UFC.
Which is so surprising to me about one, because the UFC, like, it's definitely popular worldwide, but they don't hold that many events in Asia. Like, they've had, what, three in China?
Yeah.
I don't think they've had any in Japan.
Yeah.
None in Thailand.
It doesn't really... like, gates and even pay-per-view numbers don't really matter to the UFC anymore. They had signed that contract with ESPN, and it came out that ESPN, for their pay-per-views, they pay the UFC $30 million. So the UFC just makes $30 million. That's not with all the sponsors they plaster all over everything. That's not outside of the U.S., right, where there are other pay-per-view buying audiences. That's not for the ticket sales. That's not for any of the merchandise they sell. They just get $30 million up front from ESPN. And the cost of running those events is not $30 million, either in fees for the fighters or for the camera business. So they make a profit before the event even goes on. And so they can just make more money. And one doesn't have that. Right, one is relying on selling pay-per-views and actually like selling tickets, and the biggest pay-per-view buying audience is and live event buying audience is America.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bummer, man. It's sad.
Yeah, because there's so much talent in one championship. Like, all their fighters are like just so good. Like, everything I've watched so far, I've never been like, nah, this guy's mid, or like, nah, whatever. Like, I'm not entertained by this. Like, pretty much every fight that I've watched in the last maybe few months, I've been exploring ONE Championship, and like, you know, I haven't been like delving deep into the records here, but like, I've just been kind of watching as they come, watching some highlights, various videos on, because on Amazon Prime now. I haven't been disappointed.
Yeah. It's, I think, like, the fights, when I do see them, are awesome. I think they do have a little bit of an issue with, like, trying to, like, get people to know about it. Because even, like, when I jumped online, you were like, oh, there's a fight going on Amazon Prime. But I didn't even know about it. And I had been in that app earlier that day. And Amazon for sure knows that I watch MMA. It has records of everything I do on the internet. So it should know. That it should put that like front page when I open the app, but it doesn't.
I have to definitely like go searching for like when's the next event.
Yeah,
on Amazon Prime, like I don't know what they're doing with it. Like it takes very little to market that, and it would be, and even like their own announcers, I can tell they're like really trying to hype it up. You know, like
You know, it's not accusing anyone of anything, but occasionally, when you see businesses bringing in an insane amount of money, but seem to not be taking the basic and necessary steps to bring customer eyes to their product. In the past, that usually has been indicative of businesses more interested in laundering money through their business. I'm not saying that's what's happening with any business on earth, but I would say that when you see something like that, it's worth giving a little chin scratch to, thinking about that. Anyway,
what else you got? I think we got time for one more.
God, I don't got much. I don't know. Did you watch the last sumo basho?
So okay, it's so funny that you're telling me this right now, because one of my really good friends, she got really into it, and was watching them. She was giving me like the play-by-play, the highlights, because she would watch them on replay, like, late at night, and then the next day, she would come in and tell me, like, oh my god, he did it again. I don't know any of their names, but, like...
Neither do I.
Like, the smaller guy is, like, he's undefeated in the tournament so far, like, and, yeah, man, like, sumo's legit, like, a lot, like, just like how the average MMA, or the first, like, when you first get into MMA, a lot of people are, like, what is this? Why are they just rolling around on the ground so much? This is really weird. Like, the average person would see sumo and just like, okay, it's just two fat guys like pushing each other around. Like, dude, they are like, one, first of all, they are so big.
Dude, like, they are monsters.
Like 200 kilograms, which is over 400 pounds. And to be moving that fast is terrifying.
Yes.
Like, oh my god, like,
Well, yeah, dude, and then you see how hard they fall.
Yeah,
it's yeah. No, I don't. It's interesting. This last Basho, I had not really watched sumo too much before, so I didn't really know like a lot of the rankings, a lot of the terminology. Right, it's such an old thing, but it's right. This was the first Basho, and I don't know, was it 100 years that somebody this was their first tournament at this rank, and they. As a novice, they won the Basho overall.
Yeah.
So pretty cool. But yeah, I was at my in-laws' house actually, and just like waiting for something to do. And they don't have like Comcast. They have like the local basic cable. And so I was flipping through, and it's like C-SPAN, like you know, talk radio, but on TV, and they had a channel that was like just like local sporting events, and it was like it definitely felt like a after school special from the 90s. But they were playing. It was day 15 of the Basho. They were playing the highlights from the first 14 days, and I just sat there for like 2 hours and watched it. And I was like, "This is fucking awesome. This is so cool." Yeah. So I think because is it every 2 months or every 3 months they have a Basho? I think we definitely got to start watching them because it's.
I think they're one per season. You've got like a spring, a fall, summer, things like that.
Okay. Yeah. So one every 3 months then. Yeah. It's pretty awesome. And I don't understand like how someone could look at it and go, "Oh, it's just fat guys pushing each other around." It's like 3 seconds of hyper violence, and then like somebody either like gets pushed out of the ring, and you go, "Oh wow, I saw that one dude push that dude like 10 feet back," or they get flung right onto their stupid heads, and like it's awesome. I think it's so good.
Yeah, but I mean that's the thing. Like people don't take the time to. See it and say, and what I love most about it is like all the tradition that surrounds it. You know, you've got like the rankings and how you have to earn your way up, and you know, how these tournaments are real ways to like, you know, rise up, not just in like the national rankings, but within your own, I don't know what they call it, like essentially club or school, you know, rising up within there. I think it's just a very interesting kind of microcosm of Japanese culture right now, because it's like you have something that is insanely, you know, honored and revered within the society and the culture, and has been for a long time, but it's also something that like the new generation isn't pursuing. Like I read somewhere that the sumo organization had to like lower some of the restrictions to try to get more people to actually become sumo wrestlers.
Like, yeah, man.
Just to try to bring more interest and bring more, because like they're on a very, very sharp decline in terms of actual participants right now, which is kind of sad, you know, that you wouldn't like realistically in 10, 20 years, there might not be sumo wrestlers. Yeah, but there's just like a lot of other things involved with it that I find really interesting. Even the rankings of the referees, like based on the color uniform they're wearing, and like the higher ranking officials, they actually carry katanas with them because it was supposed to be like their judgment, their rule is like 100%. They are on top of it. But if they made a mistake that caused someone to lose a match or something, they would theoretically in the old days be ready to just commit seppuku right there.
Man, you're such a weeb. You're just loving, "Oh man, they got katanas and shit." No, like the tradition is really cool. I didn't know that they had lowered, because I was looking up like it, right, because you have to be part of like an actual I'm gonna get the terminology wrong, but like a sumo school basically, or academy.
Yeah.
But it also talked about like there are, if you're going to be a sumo wrestler, there are rules, and you can be kicked out and not allowed to compete in sumo if you don't wear your hair a certain way.
Right.
You have to eat a certain amount. They're not allowed to drive cars, right? Like it's illegal for them to drive a vehicle. And a lot of it is really restrictive on the type of clothing you wear, if you're allowed to date, if you're allowed to, like what establishments you're allowed to go into. It's an extremely repressive and controlling culture if you want to be a sumo wrestler. And part of that is in the very cursory reading. So if I get details wrong, forgive me, whoever is listening to this. But right, sumo wrestlers, quote unquote, back in the day, right, before modern times, these were just huge monsters kind of roaming the land who could kick the shit out of anyone. And so there was a lot of fear about, like, hey, if four of these 700-pound dudes decide to just, like, roll up to a village, they could cause a lot of, like, chaos, because who's going to stop them? And so, yeah, there's a lot of restrictions around, like, what they're allowed to do, because, and a lot of them had been enacted by the government because they were terrified that a sumo school could essentially, like, start an uprising in a town. But now we live in the year of our Lord 2024, and people are like, hey, I'd like to be able to not dress a certain way. I'd like to be able to go out and do stuff when I want to do it. You know, I want all the luxury of other professional athletes. I don't want to have to deal with all this other stuff. So I could see why it would be dropping off. And it's also right, it's only in Japan that anyone really pays attention to it. I know in Mongolia there's a following, yeah. But you're not going to really. And the, like I said, like these, like you said, these dudes are athletic and they're big. They could play, they might be able to play other sports. And also, like, sumo wrestlers die pretty young, I think, overall.
I mean, I can imagine.
A lot of wear and tear on your body and your organs being that size.
Yeah. Not to mention literally also doing, like, training and combat, you know? Like,
yeah.
Most people, you're like, I've trained my body to absorb that, you know? And they've trained their body in a different way, but yeah, it's literally just mass.
Yeah.
Mass moves mass, and, like,
well, a lot
God,
of their,
those guys are strong.
I looked up some of their, like, training, and it's not... You know, homies aren't doing, like, circuits and worrying about, like, recovery time and making sure they get, you know, cold plunges and sleep. Like, it's – they really – what they do for most of the day is just mock matches or just, like, starting positions. It's not – you know, they aren't –
It's very old school.
Yes, which turns out that'll obliterate every ligament in your body. yeah. So –
Yeah, I'm down. No. If they're the next one that comes up, yeah.
Well, there's one going on right now. I'm actually looking at it, but maybe we'll do the one in May.
Okay.
There's a big one in May. But yeah. So there you go. There's a smorgasbord of things to watch. Boxing, yeah. Sumo, got 4-ounce Muay Thai in one. Slap fighting, maybe, never.
I'll talk about that. But I do want to bring up one last thing. Do you see that Sean Strickland posted yesterday that he's basically said, yeah, I'm now down to fight Paulo Costa?
Ah, that'd be a good fight.
Yeah. He posted on his Twitter basically saying, like, he had a meeting with the UFC to talk about, like, future and financials and blah, blah, blah. But the thing that he said at the end was, like, I'm ready. Like, I'm down to fight Paulo Costa. Like, are you in? Because I think Paulo Costa was calling him out on Twitter before or something. And Sean Strickland was basically for a long time to say, like, I'm only fighting, you know, Drixus, and I feel like if you don't give me that rematch, this is, like, fucked. I'm gonna go boxing instead, you know. But now he's changed his tune. So
yeah, well, he definitely could never go boxing.
Well, yeah, I know.
Yeah,
but
that's, I love how they threaten that when we most fans know that there's, like, quite literally no way other than dying to get out of your contract with the UFC. So it's like you're not going to actually have no leverage over anything. No, I think that's a good fight. I'm just pulling up the rankings right now. I was also wondering if they were, like, maybe after this Bo Nickel fight, they were saving Strickland because he's, like, the least the chance for a knockout or, like, severe injury when fighting Sean Strickland is pretty low. And so I wondered if that's, like, the fight that, because of everyone else, right? You've got Robert Whittaker, Jared Cannonier, Marvin Vittori, you're probably not going to get knocked out, but then Paulo Costa, Imavov, like, these are people that can, like, hurt someone that's not ready, where Sean Strickland doesn't quite have that. But yeah, if he fights Paulo Costa, that'd be pretty good. It reminds me of the Paulo Costa fight against Uriah Hall, where Uriah Hall was, like, lancing him with his jab for 2.5 rounds until like his arm got tired, and then Paulo Costa was still there and was able to knock out Uriah Hall. It'd be interesting to see, because that's Sean Strickland is just basically a jab with a couple of kicks thrown in. If that'd be enough to stop Paulo. Yeah. What do you think? Do you like that fight, or you want Chris Weidman to fight Paulo Costa?
No, I don't. I really don't. I think it'd be good. I think it's it'll help sort out the rankings a little bit, but I think Paulo Costa would have Sean Strickland beat though on this one.
Yeah,
like you were saying. I think it's good for the division, but I don't skill wise. I think Paulo Costa has the edge on that. So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it should be entertaining.
Yeah, and that's even if this fight will happen, right? Like, he's talked about it, he's calling it up. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. They have a UFC Apex card coming up. They need a main event for that, and it's going to be whoever is willing to fight Sean Strickland, right? And so it might be, like, Paul Craig or fucking, I don't know, Jack Hermanson. Like, and then it just ends up being a boring fight. But yeah, no, if that's the fight that gets made, it'd be good. Like, once we can kind of, like, figure out the logjam at the top of middleweight, that'll be better too, all right? Because we don't know, like, is Israel going to stay there? Or is he going to move up to 205? What's, you know, can Khamzat fight more than once a year? It's hard to know. Jared Cannonier, whose last win was against Sean Strickland, has not fought in a while, and he's just kind of floating around. Yeah, just trying to wait and see. But yeah.
Yeah. All right. I think that's good. I think that's good for today. I think we hit some good topics so far. So yeah,
watch Sumo.
Watch Sumo. Watch Sumo. Yeah. Watch Sumo and boxing.
Watch more Sumo to watch and boxing.
MMA.
Yeah, exactly. Don't just watch. I mean, do like literally anything else like with your time. Like, MMAs are pretty low. Don't watch slap fighting. If you watch slap fighting,
no,
don't listen to this. Don't listen to us. Don't contact me.
I got something for that later on. So.
All right.
Why don't you take us home?
Yeah, this has been Two Fight Fans. I'm one of the Fight Fans, Stuart.
I'm the other Fight Fan, Colin.
And we'll talk to you later.